Previously on No Reserves Radio.
Oh my God, Angelo, come on. have some self-respect. The Eagles can't hurt you if you don't constantly pander to them.
Here's the biggest indictment of Dame that I can say. Dame has been so like off this year that Ren went on live air and said Jalen Brunson deserved an all-star start over him.
You are now Angelo DiDeLulo.
Do you think it is possible that the management of the Memphis Grizzlies are just buying into the reckless youth movement and they got rid of the one person in the locker room that probably was telling Ja to knock it off?
Because he's taken advantage of me multiple times when I was younger. That sounded bad. Holy shit.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think you're correct in that assessment.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to No Reserves Radio. I'm your host, Ren. Angelo and Austin with me, as always.
As always? As always with Austin. Austin's kind of like low-key recurring guest at this point. What?
I don't know what we're doing. I don't know.
I do.
Okay, what are we doing?
You didn't have a better intro than that plan. Just, hey guys, you know, no NBA news to start off with. No, just
why don't we restart this and let Angelo
go
since he has
No, we're not restarting this. This is happening now. Fuck you. You know, I know you haven't been here for months, so you don't get how this works now, but.
You know, I would be here more if you guys stuck to the schedule.
That is.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, really?
We're a little. Okay.
Oh, really?
Anyway, NBA news. Karl Anthony Towns suffered a torn MCL, potentially season ending. Hopefully he's back in time for the playoffs. I did actually go to the game last night, Pacers versus the Timberwolves. I was upset that Cat wasn't playing, but there's nothing you can do to avoid it. And obviously, his health comes first. Realistically, I don't know if he should have been playing in the lead up to the injury announcement, because it sounds like there was some grumbling from his part about leg pain. But yeah, best team in the NBA record-wise. Hopefully he is back in time for the playoffs, because I think this is a team that we all think could make some noise. But it's going to be a lot harder without Cat, because he is their second best player. And I think that we are at the point where that isn't even an argument anymore. Like, I know that there was some debate whether this is Cat's team or this is Ant's team. I think at this point, most fans are aware this is Anthony Edwards' team. Correct?
Agreed. I definitely rescind my Anthony Edwards hate.
Oh, you mean the not top five shooting guard Anthony Edwards take?
Yeah, no, dude okay, deserves it this year for sure.
I will.
This year. Okay. Go ahead. Sorry.
I will say it was like really nerve wracking. Obviously, the Pacers lost the game, but on the very first play, Anthony Edwards rolled his ankle, ran off the court, like sprinted off the court. Which, if you hurt your ankle, why are you? Never mind.
Since you got to experience a game live, what is the difference live as opposed to watching it at home?
Yes, this is my very first time ever seeing a basketball game live.
Well, no, but it's fresh in your head. The experience is fresh in your head.
So I think
I'm asking
so.
Now.
When we talk about like momentum in sports, right? Right, we talk about momentum in sports. I think that it goes. Okay, I'll use the analogy of a video game. You know how there's like the meter that shows momentum in some games and like it's swaying one way or the other, one way or the other. You can feel that energy in an arena. So like the Pacers were down, I think, 17 going into the half, and like the arena, it was quiet. Like you could hear people like talking next to you. And real quick, there was a group in front of me I don't know, because my tickets were like 240, and there was a group of three women in front of me that just, they didn't look at the court the entire game. They were looking at each other, just talking, and then they got up halfway through the second, left, and never came back. Don't know why they wasted their money. But then the Pacers started to go on a run. I think Aaron Nesmith hit a couple threes. Tyrese Halliburton hit a big three. There was the TJ McConnell steal that led to a Miles Turner dunk. And when that, like, all of that's happening, the arena is getting louder and louder and louder. And, like, when you're watching a game on TV, there's a lot more dramatics because you're hearing the commentator, right? But when you're at the start of an NBA game or any sporting event, really, and you don't have a color commentator telling you an anecdote about this player and how him and his dad used to go fishing down the road, and like there's nothing going on, and the game's still like 10-7, so there's not much energy in the arena. And then as it goes on, like, there's nothing, in my opinion, as comparable as live sports. Like, you just, it feels different. Like when the final play, which was freakish athletic freakishly athletic endeavor by Anthony Edwards. He hit his head on the freaking rim, his shoulder on the backboard for the block, right? But when they showed it on the camera, like the replay, yes, Ant got a clean block, but Gobert's hand was on Aaron Nesmith's chest. And when you see that on the camera, the entire arena just erupted, like anger. Just honestly, I've been to a lot of games, and I think that was the loudest booing I've ever heard. And like, I've been to playoff games. I've been to Colts Patriots games back when Brady was there. And I've never heard booing quite like I heard last night, which is weird because it was a regular season game and it wasn't really, like, there was some, in my opinion, bad calls both ways. I don't think that the refereeing was exactly A-list. I don't think refereeing decided the game. I just think that it was really interesting that for a relatively calm, pointless game, everyone got as into it as they did. And I will say, as a Pacer fan, it's great, like, going to Gainbridge Fieldhouse and not seeing empty seats. Like, the arena was packed. So for me, I'm biased.
You're not used to hearing booing. You're from Indiana.
We boo everyone.
No, you don't.
Homie, this, we do. Trust me, we do. Every time LeBron touched the ball when he was on the Heat, he got booed. Every time Ja Morant touches the ball, he gets booed. Like, it's very loud. But I haven't seen anything like this in a long time.
So here's a question, because obviously me and Alex just released an episode and we got into an argument over evaluation process. I have never heard you talk about, like, how do I explain this? Like, sprint speed or like perform it,
like physicals.
Well, not only physicals, but also statistical performances compared to other players on the same team or other players on different teams. So, is basketball now a less analytical game than both football and baseball at this point, and probably hockey?
I don't think so. I just think that it's like the things you're asking are not necessarily as important. So, like, the fastest player in the NBA, right?
Sure.
Like, this season, it's Kaiser Gates.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly, right?
Exactly.
Hold on, let me find. So the fastest speed player that you're gonna know is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, which is Hamadou Diallo at 4.79 miles per hour average per game. Interestingly, he's a lot faster on offense than defense. He actually is 5.54 miles per hour on offense and 3.76 miles per hour on defense. The highest moving player, the player that moves the most, is Tyrese Maxey. The problem is, like, while these are interesting stats, right? Like, it is interesting to see that Tyrese Maxey, Miles Bridges, De'Aaron Fox, Mikal Bridges, and DeMontis Sabonis move more than any other player. That's absolutely interesting. It's also kind of irrelevant in basketball. I think that there's a lot better. So we talked about this in the group chat a while ago, like Windshare, right? Windshare is a great metric to compare players within their own team. It's not necessarily a great metric to compare players between teams unless you're comparing them within the context that their teams are different, right? Because a bad player on a really good team is going to have not necessarily a better win share, but a closer win share to a good player on a, yeah. So like, I'm trying to think of like two teams. So like Cade Cunningham is going to have a decent win share relative to his teammates. He's going to look a lot worse than Jason Tatum. Now, is Jason Tatum better than Cade Cunningham? Absolutely. But if you were just to look at Windshare, it's going to show that Jason Tatum is a lot better than Cade Cunningham. And a player like Derek White is something Cade Cunningham's going to be close to. Is Derek White a better player than Cade Cunningham? No. So when you're looking at the analytics in basketball, you have to look at each individual one within the context of what it implies. Whereas I think in football, because things kind of compare objectively either way, it's a lot easier to just take, like, what's a good.
So that's kind of not, I guess we're not, I feel like we're not in the same ballpark. Okay. Because in football, you can fall in love with someone's athletic profile, whether they're, you know, fast, agile, bursty. Absolutely. And their, you know, college production. But once they start getting NFL snaps, basically all that becomes irrelevant and it's out the door. So this is just how I feel. You're comparing like what players are doing in the NBA now to my, we're trying to predict how someone's going to play in the NFL based on athleticism and college stats. Is there something like that? Is there something that people fall in love with before they play an NBA game that people use to gauge whether or not someone's going to be successful?
So I think
highlight reel.
Mixtapes.
Highlight reel.
For sure. So the thing is, I think college football translates closer to the NFL than college basketball. And I don't necessarily have a reason as to why, but I it could also just be because, like, let's say you are okay at catching a football, but you are fast as hell. You can be a wide receiver as long as you can make the right route reads or whatever it is. I don't know. Like, you can, I think, more as a positional player, not like as a quarterback or some other positions. I'm sure there's other positions. You can exist in the NFL just off athleticism, correct? Like, if you're freakishly strong and able to hold on to the ball, you could be a good running back, right?
I will say this, but I'll let you finish your point, but I'm going to say something.
So I think that in terms of translation, it's a lot easier to see how a player is doing in college and football and translate that more eloquently to what their expected production is in the NFL. Obviously, it's not going to be exact because nothing is exact, but it's going to be, in my opinion, a lot easier to get closer to, you know, this is this player's floor, this is this player's ceiling, and that floor and ceiling is going to be a lot closer than what we're going to say for a player in a small school for basketball. Just because there's so much, like, you can be an elite shooter. Jimmer Fredette arguably could have been one of the best shooters of all time, but his game just didn't translate because he was small, couldn't play, like, played less defense than, I don't know, Trae Young, didn't really have a wingspan, wasn't super athletic, but he could shoot. That was the only thing he could do. Looks great in college. We all remember Jimmer Fever, but it didn't translate because that only gets you so far. But what were you going to say?
So in the NFL, you can have someone, and I'm not sure if this happens in the NBA, because I don't think it does, because the only thing you can do about it is... Anyway, you can have a player who is extremely talented. You can, so you said you can run really fast, and you can, and if, as long as you're able to catch a ball, you can be on the football field. Well, here's the thing. Yes, you can be on a football field, but no, that doesn't necessarily translate to production, because in the NFL, you can have a player who is like really, really fast. You can just have him run a go route the whole game and just not throw to him and just use him as a decoy to open everything else below that. That person is on the field. So you can have a situation where that person's your best player, but that person isn't getting production. So just because someone is athletic, has produced in college, and is, I guess, debatably the best player on your field, they're not necessarily getting production. I don't think that happens in the NBA. If you're the best player on the Boston Celtics, you're going to have production, where if you're the best wide receiver on the New England Patriots, that necessarily isn't going to show unless you're being used properly, unless you're being given those opportunities via scheming.
I mean, utilization is integral. Like, that's, but does that, like, so it doesn't matter how you were going to use Jimmer Fredette. He was never going to make it in the NBA, right? So,
because he had physical flaws. I'm saying there are wide receivers who don't have physical flaws, who don't produce because of how they're utilized.
Right, but the talent's there. Right, so that's what I'm saying. Like, you can see a player in college, right? Understand what their floor and ceiling is, and then you can see them not producing because they're not being utilized, not because they're not able to produce. Correct?
Yes.
So, I guess an example in the NBA, because that's what we're juxtaposing the NBA and the NFL here, right? Mm-hmm. So, just because this is on my head because I went to a game last night. Aaron Nesmith is a kind of prime example, because on the Celtics last season, he played 11 minutes per game, 3.8 points, 39.6 field goal percentage, 27.0 3-point percentage, 1.7 rebounds, half an assist, half a steal, right? Fast forward, now he's playing 24 minutes, averaging 12.2 points per game on 50-40 shooting. 4 rebounds, an assist and a half, and a steal. So the utilization is a thing in the NBA as well. And a player be misutilized.
Kind of. So that's again a minutes thing. I guess what I'm saying is,
because he went from shooting 40-27 to 50-45.
I feel like the aspect of, like, in football, you have to depend on someone else really to get the production.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and
yeah. Well, get the ball in your hands. After you get the ball in your hands, then it's on you.
like if you have like if you have a bad quarterback, like no matter how good a receiver you are, you're not going to be as productive.
Right. So can let's is there because now I'm going to flip this around on you. And by the way, listeners at home, we went into tonight's episode thinking about what we wanted to talk about, and then Angelo said, "I know what we're going to talk about," and then he hit record. So you're getting this on the fly. This is an unprepared episode, and I think we're doing okay so far. It's just bear with us because there are things we're going to have to.
Did you have to say that? See, here's the thing, Ren. Did you have to like mention that?
Yes.
If you would have if you would have just kept going with it, and we would have just talked like we normally talk, no one would have thought that. You just put it in their heads.
So I have to put that disclaimer here because we don't.
There's no.
No, would you shut the fuck up for 2 seconds? I have to put the disclaimer there because we don't have like normally I have a cheat sheet pulled up of everything we're going to talk about, everything I want to talk about, and I'll have like certain players pulled up. I don't have anything pulled up. So if I need to pull up a stat, it's going to take me a second. So there's going to be a little bit of radio silence. So I'm just warning them ahead of time. Anyway, now that you've interrupted me 7 freaking times, I can get back to my question, which is in football.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any, well, I guess there is. I think I already know the answer. Like, because the Super Bowl, Brock Purdy, never mind. Can a team make a bad quarterback better than he is?
Yes.
Okay.
To a degree.
Yes. So one of the things me and Alex talk about is like quarterback development, because I think when it comes to at least fantasy drafting, quarterback is probably the hardest position to draft for. You have guys you like, you have guys you don't like. It's basically a crapshoot.
Mm-hmm.
I am a firm believer that if the team you're getting drafted on has weapons, has an offensive line, and sets you up for success, that quarterback, even if you don't think they're as talented as the next one, is probably going to produce better because of that stuff around them. Tom Brady was a 6th-round pick. Tom Brady had almost absolutely no physical attributes that you would want. And his production, I don't even know what his production was because I'm not even sure if I could pull those numbers up. Anyway, you can have players develop into something good because they have everything around them already and they're given the tools to develop. That was my whole argument with Justin Fields. Alex's big thing with Justin Fields was, you know, he doesn't do reads fast enough. He doesn't do his progressions fast enough. I was like, dude, if he's on the right team, he can be good. And Alex just didn't want to hear that. And he got drafted to Chicago. And I said, rip Justin Fields on that one. But regardless, yes, you can have someone who at the time is a below average quarterback or not there yet, have everything else around him, and that team can be successful, and that quarterback gets better and better as it goes on. In fact, this probably won't happen nowadays, but Rex Grossman is an example of a quarterback who is mediocre basically his entire career or bad, and he made a Super Bowl. So
this is interesting because I have is Michigan a good football school?
Yes. Okay. Well, now, yes.
Okay, so they weren't back in the day.
No,
so
I'd say amazing.
So Tom,
when Jim Hart and Jim, go ahead,
so
sorry.
Tom Brady finished his career at Michigan, ranking 3rd in attempts and completions, 4th in yards and completion percentage, and 5th in touchdown passes. So for the record, it's 710 attempts, 442 completions, 5,351 yards, 62.3 completion percentage, and 35 touchdown passes. So did those, I'm being completely serious, do those numbers not jump off the page at all?
Yes,
it
so
honestly depends on who he played that year, though.
I'm going to be real with you. When it comes to analyzing, like, getting analytics on college prospects, the numbers themselves don't matter unless it's at benchmark. So like with receiver, you breaking out is having a 950 or higher receiving year. So it's not really judged on the numbers themselves. It's more judged on how did you perform based on the competition? How did you perform based on your own team? Mm-hmm. It's not the wins, losses, and the stats in a vacuum don't matter. It's how you just opposed to everyone else. Which is why I said Tom Brady, you can't really, I don't think the analytical numbers are there for when Tom Brady was entering the NFL.
So, I don't know. I'm
actually going to pull this up and see what, if they're in there.
What is the average Wonderlic score? Because I know Brady got a 33, and I don't know if that's good or not.
Let's see. I can actually tell you where that is based on his peers. If it's on here. Yes, it was a 74th percentile. So that is above average.
So the average score for a QB is 25.9.
Yep.
They break it down to like they had other people doing it. And like a systems analyst, an average Wonderlic score is 32. An engineer is 29. A copywriter is 27. A librarian is also 27.
If I'm being honest with you, I'm not quite sure what the obsession is with the Wonderlic scores, because as far as predicting quarterback play, it's not a good statistic for it.
I don't understand. Like, I don't know what the Wonderlic really is. My thought on it, and perhaps you can correct me here. It's just supposed to kind of register your problem solving ability and your ability to.
Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady had a 33. Patrick Mahomes' Wonderlic score is a 24.
So.
And it's 19th percentile among quarterbacks.
I would think that the purpose of it is to kind of calculate your problem-solving ability, your ability to analyze something on the fly. So I get the idea behind it for a quarterback. Is it the most important thing? No. Is it?
I argue it's not important at all.
I don't know, because when you really think about it, physical abilities from a quarterback position are important, but they're not like defining. You can be a slow.
No, that's what makes quarterback the hardest position to predict. That's why I said
like,
it was a crapshoot.
If you have a quarterback who's on the lower side of the athletic spectrum, who has a high Wonderlic score, potentially what you're looking at is a player that's able to make better strategic decisions both pre-snap and during the snap. And I think that's probably you call it the obsession with the Wonderlic. I just think it's a way to get, I think it's useless for quarterbacks that have more tools at their disposal, whether that's a cannon of an arm or, you know, they're faster than the secondary.
Just out of curiosity, what was Peyton Manning's Wonderlic? Peyton Manning was literally average.
But realistically, like, all of this is irrelevant in the grand scheme of things. Yeah. That's the thing about, like, combine results. Like, people obsess over them. Oh, what was this player's 40 time? It doesn't really matter. I mean, that translates okay, but...
It does matter and it doesn't matter. So, you're not trying to say with 100% certainty this player is going to hit, this player is going to bust. You're trying to make a probability. You're basically trying to make it so that you hit more than you miss based on historical precedent. So, like, historically, people who wide receivers who produce in college tend to be more successful in the NFL. So you try to get more productive wide receivers, more productive college wide receivers on your team. It's really as simple as that stuff.
I've always seen combines as kind of not meaningless, but sort of meaningless, because like I really don't care how quick you can run in a straight line in a vacuum. Like if I'm looking at a receiver, I'm not just looking at how fast you are. I'm looking at how well you do against a press coverage, how well you can get away from someone, the decision making in traffic. And I don't think you get that from, oh, he ran real fast in that straight line. So I think that
Go ahead. I was going to say, I honestly don't think the combine's going to be around for a long, long time, at least for NFL. And if it is, my prediction is it's going to be more third, fourth, fifth round picks that are going to attend the combine. And all the first rounders are just going to say, my college production was enough.
Right. And that's what I'm saying.
There's a lot doing that this year.
I think that's how it should be, because it really doesn't matter that you can run in an open field quick. Like, are there receivers that are dominant that are slow or slower? For
yeah,
yes,
right. So like, why do we care how fast he ran? We should care about his production and the eye test, and like, that's the point of scouting. You pay a scout to go sit at this player's game and grade them for a reason, because a game is more important than a drill. You can be really good at a drill, tell me if I'm wrong here, and be a terrible player.
You can also be really good in a college game and be a terrible NFL player.
Right, but if you're good in a college game and then a terrible NFL player, your combine results have nothing to do with that. You can be really good in college and have a really good combine and be a terrible player. You can be a really bad player, have a really bad combine, and then end up being a decent player. Like, I think that there's a point where everything's getting overthought. And I think that's, as fans, we're really guilty of it, because we like to live in a, like, the video game mindset where everything plays out exactly like it shows, right? And
yeah, or speed is king.
Or we look back and we have hindsight and, oh, how could everyone miss out on Giannis? Well, because Giannis looked pretty terrible. Not terrible, but he didn't look like Giannis, okay?
That's why I hate the, like, let's redo the draft. And it's like, oh, you know, all these people chose these bad people over Patrick Mahomes, but it's like,
at the time,
no one would have known Patrick Mahomes as Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, at the time, they made the good pick. And if you look at like the draft analysts, the nights of, most of the times they're like, oh, this is an A, this is a B, you know, this one is an F. And then you look back on it 5 years later and all of them were wrong about each one of them. And I think that we as fans overanalyze players.
Well, yeah, that's part of the content. That's part of entertainment.
I'm not saying from like air quotes analysts. I'm talking about from a just fan point of view, right? So like when you watch draft night streams for the 101 and like people are crying because their team didn't take the player that they know is going to be the best player of all time. 5 months later, or 5 years later, that player's not in the league. Neither is the one they drafted, because it's a crapshoot. As you said, you're basing your draft picks on the information available. You're not basing it on hindsight. You're not basing it on like what everyone else is doing. You're basing it off of, this is what this player did. This is what we think this player is capable of. That's why you have floor and ceiling. They fill a positional need. We're going to take them. Does it always work out? No. Does a combine change that? No. Like I said, I don't think that it does us any justice to be looking at it as a video game, because that's what we're essentially doing. Do you disagree?
Well, I don't disagree with that.
I just, in recent years especially, it feels like drafts have been overanalyzed to the point that...
That's part of getting... Okay, so you can't have your cake and eat it too. That's part of like advanced metrics and analytics getting into the game. How do you think they come up with these numbers? They overanalyze the game. So you can't be like, oh, well, we're overanalyzing everything. By the way, his defensive win shares. That's
what I'm saying.
That's the part you signed up for when you brought that into the game.
What
buddy.
I'm saying is the draft itself is a crapshoot. It's a crapshoot that you're waiting in your favor. Absolutely.
Yes.
But it doesn't matter until that player's on the floor for a tip-off or that player takes their first NFL snap. Nothing else matters. We can go talk about how he did really good when he was doing his one-on-one chest test during the combine day 73. That doesn't matter. Oh, he bench pressed 27 and a half times. He fumbled the ball in his first play and couldn't get a catch after that. But he did all those bench press numbers. It doesn't matter. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, we're overdoing it. Look at it within the realm of, you know, you're making an educated guess. But you can't just say, oh, wow, this player had a really great combine. They're going to be an all-time great. You have to look at the production on the field, because that matters more than the combine to me. So you're looking at their high school, college career.
Right, but you understand when the combine happens, none of these players have an NFL snapper. Same thing with the NBA. None of these guys have an NBA dribble.
That's what I'm saying.
So you don't know. You are making
an educated
assessment. Yes, based on the information you have at hand.
But what I'm saying,
to your advantage.
But what I'm saying is that people take the combine as more important than anything else. They're overanalyzing the combine. It doesn't, like I said, oh, he was terrible in college. His team didn't win a single game and he dropped the ball a bunch, but he had the fastest 40 time. Wow, he's so good. He's going to make changes in the NFL.
Xavier Worthy.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that you have to look at it.
Oh,
like,
no, not Xavier. You're worthy.
The whole picture is the point.
That's a prime example.
When you're going into the draft, the whole picture is what you should be looking at. And I think that people, fans, overestimate the combine in any sport. And I think that's a video game mindset, because games like Madden come out. And in that, the combine is hella important because it determines their ratings. Is it important in real life? Yeah, to an extent. But it doesn't matter if they're a bad player. If you see on the field they're a bad player and you can tell they're a bad player, I don't care what their physicals are. And that's for any sport. We have, like, in the NHL, like, a very, very physical sport. The best player, like, Connor McDavid had a terrible combine. He's the best player on the planet. Because Connor McDavid's game is not based on physicals. But people care about the combine. They were making fun of, I think it was Cale Makar, for not being able to do a pull-up. Best defenseman in the NHL. All I'm saying is you have to look at the whole picture, and I think that fans put too much faith in the combine.
When?
Every time.
So, like, no, but, like, when we talk about Nikola Jokic, we don't talk about his combine. When we talk about Justin Jefferson, we don't talk about his combine. So when are they overusing the combine? It's when they don't have the...
So let me paint you a picture, Angela.
League experience
Angela,
to just
Angela, where do I live? What city do I live in?
A disgusting backwater town.
No, say it. What city do I live in?
Well, Indianapolis.
I live in Indianapolis. Austin, can you do me a favor? Where's the NFL Combine?
Indianapolis.
Right, right, right. So, of the three of us, do either of you live in Indianapolis?
Wouldn't want to, but no.
You live in Florida. You can't.
I wouldn't sign up for it.
So, who is the one that gets to see downtown full of people acting like the Combine is bigger than Comic-Con? Hi, that's me. You couldn't drive downtown last week. They had roads closed.
The NBA Combine?
No, the NFL Combine. It was 2 weeks ago. Whatever.
Exactly. Because the NFL is better at getting people to obsess over those things. The NBA Combine is not a spectacle, my friend.
I'm not talking about that. I totally get the marketing side of things. That's not what we're discussing.
I'm not gonna
lie,
I forgot the NBA even has a combine.
That's not what we're...
Thank you!
That's not what we're debating here. What we're debating here is that we as fans take it at more than face value. Yes or no? You can say the NFL does a great job of marketing it, and they do. Absolutely.
Before the production happens, yes. But after that initial, it's a year or two, what someone's combine is doesn't matter to the vast majority. I'd even argue a very hardcore like fans or of the NFL or the NBA. It doesn't matter. I think you're taking a small like portion of time of that time after someone leaves college. But before they come into the NFL or the NBA, and you're saying people obsess over... That's because that's all they have to obsess over with these players, my dude.
But they shouldn't be obsessing over them.
So the NFL, you don't want the NFL Combine to be a spectacle. You don't want it to be that, like, because that's how you get to that point.
Hold on, I'm looking for...
Yes.
Okay, so let's go through a couple here. Do you know who Zach Miller is?
God, I literally just did this. Zach Miller. Off the top of my head, no. Let's pull him up.
All right, so
great combine.
He had a terrible combine.
Tired. What are you talking about? Oh, this guy's retired.
Disastrous.
There are two Zach Millers.
So disastrous 40-yard time of 4.83 seconds, where he was selected 38th overall. Only four tight ends ran a slower time, and none of them were drafted. Nevertheless, the former Sun Devil has gone on to forge a solid career. Since the beginning of his career, Miller ranks among the top 10 at position in catches, top 15 in yards, and top 20 in touchdowns. Weird. His combine was irrelevant. Vontaze Burfict.
I know who that is. That was an expect.
Yeah.
Really slow.
Vontaze Burfict. Yep. Very slow.
Yep. Very slow.
So let's see. He was.
But I'm trying to figure out, like, what's your point?
Oh, we'll get to it. We'll get to it. We're going to make our way through this little list. Anquan Boldin.
Hey, don't come for Anquan
Boldin. I'm going for him.
He is coming for Anquan Boldin.
So a 4.7 40-yard dash ranked last among all wide receivers. Since then, he's become one of the toughest and most consistent possession receivers in the league.
Let's see. 85th percentile dominator rating.
Oh.
Broke out before the age of 20.
So, in this article, judging any player based purely on their combine is foolish, but it seems especially short-sighted in this case. Justin Houston.
Austin, I don't think Ren figured out my point.
No, I did. What you're saying is...
Why are you saying...
Because you keep saying what... You're not acknowledging what I'm telling you. You're saying... This is something for fans to obsess over. Absolutely. I'm saying it shouldn't be.
So you don't want the NFL Combine to be of something that draws money for the NFL, is essentially what you're saying.
It's not that. It's people have Combine watch parties where they treat the shit like it's the Super Bowl.
Not in the NBA.
Not in the NBA, but as we've acknowledged, the NBA is less physically as important, I guess.
Right, but I don't know. I don't know LeBron James's 40 time. I can literally punch a number and find any wide receiver's 40 time I want in here that ran a 40.
Actually,
that's.
I'm actually curious now.
Is there a wide receiver you want me to get a 40 time for?
No.
Okay.
Actually, they compared LeBron James to so his 40-yard dash was 4.6 seconds, which puts him in the 62nd percentile. Vertical jump was 44 inches, which puts him in the 99th percentile.
Wait, LeBron James is on this. Oh my God, LeBron James ran an NFL combine.
Yeah.
I have his numbers.
Yeah.
Is he slow?
No. God, he ran a 4.38.
Have you never watched basketball, Austin? LeBron is one of the fastest players ever.
Speed is actually his worst. So I'm just going to give you this, Austin.
In a vacuum doesn't mean anything.
Actually, what is
there is
I'm
not
actually curious. What is LeBron James's Draft Express profile? Just morbid curiosity. Go on, continue what you were saying, Angela.
There's not a single metric here that's bad for LeBron James.
No, he's a freak of nature.
Yeah.
But, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, but here's the thing. This is kind of, like, making my point for me. Do you need those combine numbers to know that? Or did you know that when he was coming into the draft?
He wasn't an NFL player. I didn't know he ran an NFL combine.
No, but what I'm saying is ignore those physicals. Do you already know all those things? Do you know that he's going to be a game changer? Do you know that he's going to... Because was it not when he was in high school he had the Chosen One magazine cover? We knew how good he was going to be because we watched him play. Okay, so I don't care about his full draft profile. I'm just going to go to his weaknesses. Still needs to improve his free throw shooting. Some have questioned his killer instinct, which I think until he got older is that was fair. Doesn't have the tightest handle, agreed, but he's fucking strong as hell, so it didn't matter. There's nothing a defender can do when he decides to go to the rim. That's factual.
That's pretty much right, yeah.
Defense has been criticized for not working very hard on the defensive end, is turning things around. Maybe a more opportunistic defender than a stopper. I think he did evolve into a stopper.
For a while, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there was a period of time where LeBron looked like the best defensive wing of all time, and I still think he probably was during his prime.
Yeah, he definitely was.
But it
was that something you think people are going to not... So, here's a question, then. Is the LeBron James at the end of his career going to be how we remember LeBron James for defense when we think about him as an all-time player? Because I'm kind of concerned
about
that.
Because we don't think about Wizards Jordan. You remember the good times, not the bad times.
I agree with that, but then, like, people will say things like, LeBron or Michael Jordan is a wildly better defender because he has a DPOY when that's just simply not true. LeBron James is an elite defender on the same level. Agree or disagree?
How long was Wizards Jordan around?
2 years.
Like 2 years.
2 years. Yeah. How long is quote unquote bad defense LeBron been around?
Three.
4 or 5 years.
Four? Really?
It's been that long? Like,
I think it's four now, yeah.
Like, I don't think of Wizards MJ just because I know it didn't happen for that long.
Right, and because MJ didn't accomplish anything of note while he was on the Wizards.
But the thing
LeBron is, won a championship with the Lakers. People are going to remember
people
that.
Are gonna remember, people are going to remember that for sure, but people don't talk about LeBron's bad defense in terms of that championship. But to your question about like the Jordan versus LeBron defender, it has to be looked at in the context of the era, because there was a period of time where we don't know how good Jordan was or was not in the modern era of defense, and we don't know how good LeBron was or was not in that era, because there was a period of time where you couldn't play zone. You couldn't even like you couldn't slag off your man. You had to play on him, right? So like we give LeBron a lot more credit for his help side defense, right? Because that is something that LeBron is very good at. Jordan wasn't able to really exploit that as much. So it's not
correct.
It's not just as easy to just plug and play and say, oh, well, LeBron's a better defender because he's a more all-around defender. Absolutely.
I didn't say he was a better defender. Well, I said he's on par.
I think he is a better defender. I'm going to full disclose that because he's a bigger player. He's faster than Jordan. He's stronger than Jordan. I, as the resident LeBron hater, am confident in saying I think that LeBron James is the better overall defender. But it's hard to compare them because it's a completely different game.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I completely agree with that. So do you think there... Okay, so then in the overall NBA community, do you think there are people on both sides who are too far gone with LeBron and too far gone with MJ where they don't even want to like acknowledge that, like an MJ fan who says LeBron shouldn't even be in the conversation for the greatest. Like, I think you're too far gone.
If anyone says something like that, then they just shouldn't be listened to. Now, if you're saying MJ's far enough, like, if you are on the fence to where you're saying MJ's the best player and LeBron is the second and it's not close, I'm okay with you saying that. I'm okay with you saying the reverse, because that's a valid opinion. Like, I think no matter how you look at it, it's MJ and LeBron are one and two. It doesn't really matter which one's one and two.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But if someone's saying, oh, MJ's or LeBron's not even on the board, they're an idiot. They are just a fucking idiot and should not be listened to. And the same's in reverse, because I've heard people try to say that MJ shouldn't be in the top three. That's ridiculous. You're wrong.
That's ridiculous.
But to your point, no, we will not. Like, I don't think in the short term people will remember bad defense LeBron. And bad defense LeBron is still a good defender. It's lazy defense, but it's still a good defender. Because we don't. Like,
I think
when you look back at years, do we say, oh, Shaq was the most dominant, but then he sucked? No, because like age is just an age. Like, we don't care that Dirk suddenly was even slower than he already was. We remember
I definitely remember that.
But I feel Dirk's shooting ever fall off though?
A little, because at he just end, became he the, became end, too yeah. slow to be on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty much.
But we don't think about that. We remember the step back, the fadeaway. Like, that's what we remember about Dirk. We remember Shaq as the big diesel.
I agree with that, but at the same time, I think LeBron, because when you're talking about LeBron and where he stands all time, you have to pick hairs more than you do with Dirk or Shaq.
I agree.
As far
I'm just
as where
saying,
you're going to place them.
I'm just saying, like, we fans, because I don't think we'll remember the bad times with LeBron.
Haters.
I don't think depends. Like, I think there will be a time after LeBron retires. Maybe it's immediately, maybe it's 5 years, but there will be a time when we watch an MJ versus LeBron debate and we get the Lakers years and LeBron's bad defense in that conversation. And it's not going to be like, it's going to be, I think, a wildly accepted opinion.
Yeah, and then that'll be the future.
I mean, I think it's fair. to bring it up.
It's fair to bring it up, but that's going to be on the future Skip Bayless and Stephen A. Smith show, and nobody should listen to it.
Yeah.
Because, like, an objective basketball fan is going to say, yeah, when LeBron got to 40 years old, he was a little worse on defense. You can objectively say that while still acknowledging that prime LeBron is probably the best overall defender we've ever seen. End of career be damned.
Oh, for sure.
But yes, there will be a Stephen A. Smith, Skip Bayless type situation where they bring up that end of the career lackadaisical play as some kind of defining feature. And again, just like the person saying that they shouldn't even be in the top three, they should be listened or should not be listened to. They should honestly be ostracized. And we should stop giving them views, because I guarantee you the people saying that, like whoever is saying that, is saying it for rage views so that they get advertiser money.
Probably.
That's the only way, because you cannot objectively be a fan of basketball.
You think? I don't think they do it for advertiser money, because I think the station they're on, whether it be ESPN or Fox, takes care of the advertisers. And I just think they do it to get the views, period, right, so they, can justify staying on.
So they get more money. Because all the money is ad revenue.
That's fair.
And that's, I mean, that's what it is. Like, did you hear what this dipshit said? Here's a link to it. Click on it. Sit through the ad at the start so you can watch their crazy and hot take. Wow, it's so edgy. That's the point of it.
So, do you know what we were supposed to do this week?
What were we supposed to do this week? Is this what you and Austin were going to do last night when I was at the game?
No. I'm not going to disclose that. That's going to die with me. Fine. What you said was going to be this week was us doing our own duos, top 10 duos.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's why I just started the episode, because I was like, this motherfucker just forgot. No. He forgot what he said last week.
Yeah, that's true. I did. Top 10 duos in the NBA. Oh, God. Okay. I can do it real quick.
Oh, you're going to. I'm not going
to. I can do it real quick.
Right. You can do your list, and me and Austin can dissect it and make slide comments while you do
it. It's gonna be real quick, just because I did say so. One is gonna be Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray. I just think Nikola Jokic by himself is head and shoulders above.
He's one of the best players. 80% of that.
Yeah, 100%.
I disagree, dude. Okay, in the regular season, I agree. In the playoffs, I think Murray is more impactful as far as, like, getting you to win a game than Jokic is, because Jokic is going to do what he does. He's going to put you in that position. I think Murray gets you over the hump.
For sure. Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, number two.
Are we doing the all time?
This is just this season.
Current. This season.
You didn't tune into last week.
Yeah, you weren't here last week. Or the week before.
So I know what I said last week, and Angelo's going to ream me for this, but Kevin Durant and Devin Booker is three.
What about defense, Ren?
No, wasn't what I said. I said I just like both of them by themselves. I prefer them by themselves. I like as a duo.
Oh,
but
man.
At the same time, I really like, if you look at their combined scoring and their combined production, it's
so. Why would you not have, like, PG and Kawhi up there first?
PG and Kawhi are next, actually.
I'm gonna pull up Colin's top 10 just to see who you're.
So that was number four, correct?
Mm-hmm. You said
that was number four.
So number five will be,
there it is.
You have it.
Yep. Where's LeBron and AD? LeBron and AD is not in your top four.
No. I think here I'm gonna go. Oh God, what is?
Paolo Franz.
I'm gonna say, okay, this is gonna
Halliburton.
No, this is heavily weighted. Oh, I just no. have to highlight it's heavily weighted.
Oh no. Oh,
SGA no. Chet Holmgren.
Oh no. Oh my god, yeah, dude. Boy. You just no, Austin, Ren just said that SGA and Chet Holmgren are better than LeBron and AD, Luka and Kyrie.
Yeah.
Giannis and Dame Lillard.
Yeah. Not yeah. Boy. Oh bad boy. Bad god. Boy. Bad.
Oh my Blander. God, dude. Oh my god, dude. Oh my god.
Next is Jimmy and Bam.
Oh no. Oh no.
Oh. Oh my god. Calm the fuck down.
Oh my god, dude. You think Jimmy and Bam were better than the... Oh my god. Oh no, just make it stop. Make it stop. Oh, no more. No more.
De'Aaron Fox, DeMontis Sabonis.
What is wrong with you? What is
wrong? You remember those rage views he was just complaining yeah! about?
Jalen Brunson and Julius Randle.
Such a hater. You're such a fucking hater. Get out of here. Get out. Like, oh.
I had to leave for that one.
Uh-huh.
Brunson and Randle, that's where I draw the line.
And then rounding out the top 10 is...
This man. Go ahead, I want you to finish your top 10, then I'm going to go on my little...
Rounding out the top 10, rounding out the top 10, rounding out the top 10. Steph Curry, Draymond Green. That...
Fuck you. Fuck you, just fuck you. So this also, man, no,
like Maxi Embiid,
Embiid's no, out.
He yeah, Embiid yeah, got yeah, hurt. I won't do Embiid it. Got
oh,
hurt.
Oh yeah, that's right.
He can have a mulligan for that, but this man does not have LeBron James and Anthony Davis in his top 10. He does not have Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving in his top 10. He does not have Giannis Antetokounmpo and Damian Lillard. Giannis Antetokounmpo and Damian Lillard in his top 10.
Paolo and Franz.
Who?
Exactly.
Don't have Mitchell Garland. Oh, I don't have.
Oh man, Kat.
Is Mitchell Garland the duo there though?
Right now, yeah.
Yeah, it's
Mobley's kind of not really progressed offensively. Elite defensively still, and Allen's been kind of hit and miss in terms of injury. Mm-hmm.
That might just be the title of the video. Ren doesn't have LeBron James and Anthony Davis as a top 10 duo currently.
We will do.
Oh.
For the record, I read through a list of duos and it was in alphabetical order if you follow along.
Oh.
But we will actually do top 10 duos next week with actual like numbers and research.
Well, thanks for donating us the title, Ren. A title
You're welcome.
For this episode.
I God just wanted me, to help dude. You. That's what I'm
doing. Oh man.
I know my job lately has been the title.
What is... You know, maybe Jabari Smith Jr. and
Jahlil Okafor. Fuck it.
Fuck it.
Oh, wait, no. Okay. Jabari Smith, not Jabari Parker.
Oh, God.
Oh, man.
Where is Jabari Parker now? Okay, there's an example of a freakish athlete that just didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, it's almost like combines don't matter.
Weird.
In the NBA.
They don't matter at all. I gave you a list of quality NFL players that had terrible combines. Jabari Ali Parker is currently playing for FC Barcelona. How can you? So FC says
Bren
football club.
Have
FC. Bren FC football yes. club Barcelona basketball.
Yes.
That doesn't make sense to me.
Yes.
Okay. As long as it doesn't make sense to everyone, I'm good with it. You guys got anything else?
Yeah.
The fuck is wrong with you, man?
Take that as a no. Austin, you got any words of wisdom before we head out?
I don't.
Really?
Ren definitely doesn't.
This is probably your last episode for like 3 months, so you don't want to like say any parting words?
It's true.
Appreciate the fans, you know, everyone, all of your two fans who come to watch you and get disappointed every week. You don't have like a, actually, I'm sorry, no, there, it's going to be better.
Are, like, people that prefer Austin to you and I, which is weird.
No, 100% there are. You're not going to say, I'm sorry that Zion Williamson's New Year's resolution of losing weight is going better than your New Year's resolution of being on the show more. Nothing like that.
Again, Thursdays are slotted out. If you don't show up Thursdays, you don't.
Not yesterday.
Anymore. Okay. I was
yesterday. I'll take it.
I was busy. I was busy yesterday. I had a game to go to. Okay. Thanks for listening, guys. This was a bit of a chaotic episode. Apologies for that.
I love the chaos.
I do like the chaos. It does tend to lead itself to some fun. If you like what we do here, comment, like, follow, subscribe, whatever your podcatcher lets you do. Follow us on social media at No Reserves. We will see you next week. Angela will see you on Thursday. Do you guys have a Tuesday episode this week?
I don't think so. I'm actually talking to Alex about it now, but so we'll see.
Yeah, so if you have notifications enabled,
it might be Wednesday.
Have notifications enabled, you might get an extra No Reserves episode this week. But besides that, you'll just have Sunday, Thursday.
I'm not even going to put what we talk about in the description. I'm just going to put stuff.
Stuff. That's this stuff. Was definitely a variety episode.
We talk about stuff. Talk about
anyway,
stuff.
We'll see you guys next week. Love you. Bye.
See ya.
Austin will see you in the future.
Would you end the recording?
Post time.